enjoy a good squeeze.
Hello, and welcome to A Good Squeeze. I'm August.
I'm Margo.
And this is a podcast that explores the world of James Bond from two differing perspectives.
Two separate individuals with two very separate attachments to the franchise. And join us as we explore and tackle certain subjects that some might consider spicy, some might consider cozy, and others might just not listen to. No, I'm joking. So
I'm approaching this as the nostalgic expert.
And I am the novice viewer.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, Margo and I, we are planning to honeymoon in Goldeneye, yes, Jamaica. The birthplace of Bond, one would say, when, as I said last week, when Ian Fleming spat that name onto some paper. So we're looking to go there. Why not go on this journey, explore the world of 007? Margo's never been there. I've been there many a time. And
Goldeneye?
The world of 007.
Okay. I was like, wait, hold on.
Goldeneye, yes.
I've been there many a time. Where are these funds I don't know about?
And then I wake up.
Okay.
No, podcast okay. Business.
There we go.
We're going on this journey, and the world of 007, I've been there many times. Margo, you have not.
Well, I've been there a few times. I'm not, like, standing on the sidelines waving like a maniac, you know? I'm like, you know, I've dipped my toe in the pool. Like, I've stayed in the shallow end and gotten out very quickly and ran to my towel and then just, like, played Sudoku on my towel. Like, that's kind of where I'm at with James Bond. But appreciator, nonetheless. Like, I enjoy these movies. Exciting, entertaining, thought-provoking world that we get to witness and we get to be a part of. So
the one, then you're speaking on the ones you've seen. Some of the ones you've seen, you haven't been too smooth with.
Thought-provoking, nonetheless.
Nonetheless, and we will tackle those down the line. But yes, this is a perspective show.
Mm-hmm.
My nostalgic point of view. I keep using that word, but it's the best way to describe it. I have these warm, cozy, cuddly feelings that make me all warm and fuzzy in my tum-tum.
And James
Bond gives me comfort. And yes, Margo.
I'm novice because I don't like the word new. And so it just sounds better. Novice and nostalgic. Rolls off the tongue. Nostalgic.
Sure,
and
yeah. You know, and that's our gimmick. And it's going to provide conversation. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners, all two of you, you can hear me and maybe relate or sympathize.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and maybe you can hear Margo and relate and sympathize. You are new to the world of James Bond and are looking for maybe a starting point. That could be us.
Could be.
And we are going to explore all things James Bond, whether it's us creating our own events, celebrations, whether we're talking cocktails and food. We will discuss all these things, video games maybe, perhaps. But today we are talking film, and that will be a point down the road where, hey, Margo, you've never seen this Bond film. Let's watch it and explore it together. Mm-hmm. This one you've seen before.
That's right. GoldenEye. Boom, 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 boom.
Mana.
Nice, yeah. Thanks for listening. Have a good one. No. GoldenEye. It's been a minute, but that was, I think, the third Bond film you showed me.
The third attempt.
The third Bond film you showed me. Jesus.
Yes.
I have a little faith. I swear you're like presenting this like Margo hates Bond. She's new to it. She doesn't even know who James is. Like, I know and like some things. Like,
we heard last week you thought it was an American.
I didn't think he was American. That's the thing. I was like, he's got no borders.
And he doesn't, damn it.
Well, he almost doesn't in this film.
But you're right.
He's got no boundaries.
This was the third one I showed to you.
Yeah.
We tried Live and Let Die. We tried Casino Royale.
Yeah.
And we tried GoldenEye.
Yeah,
and
that's
one
right.
Stuck.
It did. I mean, the thing is, this entire movie is just so impressive. Not even just coming in as like a Bond, like critiquer, critic. Good job, Margo.
You said you're going to work better on laughing directly into the microphone.
Yeah, sorry. Watch your earbuds. All two of you. Sorry. Okay. It's that joke. We're just burying it because that's done.
We're squeezing.
All right. Yeah. There you go. But so, yeah, I mean, the big thing about it was that it's just such an impressive movie, just objectively, not even just from like a Bond perspective, but every single character is just so fascinating. There's so much depth to every single one of them, the villains, the good guys, everybody in between, the ones that have like 2 minutes of screen time, the ones who are the starring characters. Everybody brings something so different, so unique in this movie, which then drives the plot. And that's something I always complain about. That's something I always talk about, is if you have good characters, you got a good plot. And then that's where I get into it. But no, it's, if you have good characters, your plot is way more likely to be good. Therefore, your movie will be good. If you got shit characters, I mean, you're screwed from the beginning.
And this one, in GoldenEye, I'm assuming you'll agree with me, this one's chock full of classic characters. In my opinion, I'm biased, even beyond just the James Bond franchise. Mm-hmm. I'm talking like classic
characters. From just like
good guys,
cinema,
bad
like
guys,
that kind,
yeah,
of stuff.
Pierce,
like,
Brosnan's, yeah, intro as Bond, classic.
Mm-hmm.
Russians
as villains.
Ooh, never been done.
We're just gonna
I was gonna say,
had it never been done?
Well, no.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. I fell for it. Sorry.
This one, it was almost portraying like, hey, the Russians are actually good guys, except for, you know.
Yeah, like there's a spectrum of Russians. Oh, this is spicy. This is getting spicy. It's a little spicy conversation here.
GoldenEye spicy.
Oh, rats. Oh, man. I'm sure people can feel how uncomfortable I felt just now, and that's okay, because we're building a community here at A Good Squeeze Podcast. But you're right. There's a spectrum. There's a spectrum, mm-hmm, and within that, there's depth and there's intrigue. And as a result, you're right. Like, a lot of these characters are classic. Like, they've almost, like, pioneered tropes.
Sure, yeah. You know? This movie definitely brought Bond into the modern era.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he had, he gets called out on some of his old shit in this movie. He still does some of his old shit in this movie. But being a sexist, misogynist dinosaur.
And M's a woman. Oh, twist.
Not only is she a woman, she's the best M,
she's
in
the
my
best,
opinion.
Though. Oh, she is.
She's so good.
Dame Judi Dench.
That damn, ooh, Judi Dench.
Damn Dame, man. She is. Oh, she's something else.
Yeah.
She's not spicy. She's
She's cold.
She's cold, but like caviar. Like, she, you know,
she's
right?
Salty.
It's salty. Ooh, salty and cold, right? Caviar's cold. You don't like warm, room temp caviar.
That'd be something you would eat. Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's an iconic thing.
I could just imagine caviar on the counter. It's been there for hours, and I just go, right out of it. Sorry.
You'd probably eat it like a single grain with like chopsticks.
Out, yeah, take out my little caviar spoon that I carry with me and just. There you go. On that note, yes,
on
Dame
note,
Judi Dench.
Damn Judi Dench. Yes, mm-hmm. Like there's just some iconic stuff here. And yeah, I was saying brought into the modern era. And it certainly did. And it just gave Bond this freshness, mm-hmm, that it really needed at the time. And I'm speaking retrospectively because it was my introduction to James Bond. I touched on this in episode one, so I'll just smear over it quickly. As a young lad, I came upon Bond through the video game GoldenEye, Nintendo 64, baby. And I played the shit out of that game. And then my parents introduced me to the film, and I was able to recognize characters, locations, sometimes music beats, things like that from the game. And I just was so fascinated with this movie. I was very disappointed that when Pierce Brosnan does show up as James Bond, he doesn't actually have golden eyes. I was, you know, I was 6 years old. I was very confused.
Because I guess in the video game, you never see his eyes. It's all first person.
I mean,
right?
I'm like, the movie's called GoldenEye. That's GoldenEye, right? Like, no, it's James Bond. But as a six-year-old, I'm like,
who's GoldenEye?
I didn't know. I had no clue. That's GoldenEye great. Was like these satellites.
Okay, they are satellites, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
cool. There's two satellites. Random gotcha. Trivia moment. What were the names of the two satellites?
Golden and I.
Yes. All right, moving on.
Are you serious?
No. Okay. It's like, and now I don't even remember.
Okay, let me see. It's probably like...
They're Russian names.
Oh, are they? Okay, because I was going to say it's probably like some dumb, Rooster 12 and like a Cockatoo 6, which, I mean, not bad, but what are they?
Petya and Misha.
Which means Rooster 12 and Cockatoo 6 in Russian.
Rooster and Cock, yeah.
Petra, that's my second cousin's name.
Not Petra, Petya.
Oh, Petya. Oh, then never mind.
It's my.
Don't look her up.
That is my name. So playing the game, watching the movie, and then that from there has been, that was the starting point. Mm-hmm. I watched all the films from there, reading books, playing games, my whole life, and viewing Bond from a very cozy perspective. GoldenEye in general has had an interesting journey for me. Personally, is like ranking, like tiering my Bond films. And it had always sat comfortably at number two. When I was a young lad, I came upon the film Goldfinger. And that one just like captivated me. And I loved Goldfinger. I liked the classiness of it. And I could just respect how how classic it mm-hmm. was, the classy film. And it had been my favorite Bond film since I was like 10 years old or something. Mm-hmm. And then Casino Royale came out. And for me at the time, couldn't pass up Goldfinger, but it did pass up GoldenEye. And it stayed that way from like 2006 until I don't know when, but it teetered. Then it was like whatever film I was watching. It's either Casino Royale or it's GoldenEye is my number two. Nothing could pass up Goldfinger. But then, man, it was during the pandemic, I rewatched GoldenEye, and it just dawned on me. I'm like, this film has my favorite Bond, Pierce Brosnan. It dawned on me that it had my favorite Bond girl in Natalia. It had some of my favorite Bond hench characters and my favorite Bond hench character. And I'm talking like, you know, you got your Jaws, your Odd Jobs.
Is hench character an actual term?
It is now.
It's like, oh, hench character.
And there's henchmen and women.
Henchmen and women.
I don't want to, you know, I don't know their pronouns, so they're hench characters. Cool. And Xenia on the top. I think she's my favorite. Not even think.
Xenia is, oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. That is a... That's a person.
Yeah. It has my favorite Bond villain lair, the cradle, the satellite. Mm. You know, I just love, there's so many things in this film I just love. It's like my top tier Bond. How is it my third favorite Bond film? How's it my second favorite Bond film? It became my favorite, as it should have been all along.
Yeah.
For me personally, but I really think this movie has it all. And to the point, Goldfinger, which was so firmly planted at number one, has like fallen. I say number three just because it's easy, but it might be dropping lower and lower and lower.
Yeah, and we'll cover that.
That's another day. This isn't called Goldfinger episode two. This is GoldenEye. But that was my intro to GoldenEye. That's kind of where it sits today. But yeah, we just mentioned this is my third viewing, or not third. This is my third attempt at James Bond with you. Mm-hmm. You watched it. You just said you loved it. We watched it again to warm up for this podcast and to discuss it here.
Mm-hmm.
How did your second viewing treat you? Anything change? Did you notice anything?
It was even better.
New?
It was even better. The big factor was I went in knowing I was going to like this movie. And when you go in knowing you already liked a movie and you... Okay. Well, okay. I was going to say, like, if you liked a movie once upon a time and you're going in saying you like this movie, you're going to like it again. Now, that is a recipe for disaster. It can be. But I went in to this movie the first time around being very, very firmly uninterested in Bond, just kind of, again, all my previous beliefs on the matter had been reaffirmed thanks to Live and Let Die, and then I fell asleep during Casino Royale, which is like the eighth deadly sin.
Yeah.
Falling asleep during a movie.
So thou shalt not fall asleep showing to Casino. No, just
Casino Royale. But that's what I mean. It's like I went into GoldenEye thinking you were like, this Bond girl's really cool. Like, oh, and the cinematography is cool and Bond knows how to fight. And like, that's one thing. Okay, so I'll get to that in a second. But I went in with a negative perspective and it blew me out of the water. It was a great movie. I really enjoyed it. Everything about it. I loved the villains. I loved Xenia. I loved Natalia. I loved Pierce. What's his name? James Bond. Good job, Margo. And the guy with the hat, the sheriff guy. What's his name? Or the FBI guy. Wade. Thank you.
Yeah. I was like, Sheriff J.W. Pepper.
That's another conversation. But I really enjoyed everything. Boris, oh my god, Boris. There's so much about it.
Even the main villain, who we haven't touched on, but like Trevelyan,
oh,
Alec.
Yeah. Oh god, when he's like that first opening scene where, you know, he's got Sean Bean on his knees and he's kind of...
That is Sean Bean. Trevelyan is Sean Bean.
Oh, is that it?
You're talking.
Wow. I thought you meant... Oh, okay. You know what? No, we're keeping it in because I'm okay with admitting when I get things wrong.
General Ormoff.
When he's got Sean Bean on his knees, he's sticking his gun out towards him with a fully extended arm. He's got his little hip check out and he's got his hand on his hip and he's like, what are you gonna do, Bond? Well, not word for word, but like he essentially...
Just with a Russian accent.
Yeah, he was sending that message with that pose, I'll tell you that.
He was displaying great sass.
Yeah, he was. I've seen like 3-year-old girls do that. I'm like, oh, okay. I used to be a preschool teacher. I would like to just put that context if I bring up any kind of analogy with children, I used to be a preschool teacher. I have my major was in child and adolescent development with an emphasis in early childhood education and a minor in special education. I mention kids a lot because I know a lot about kids. Just a heads up.
She said all that with her hand firmly placed on her hip, displaying great size.
Yeah.
Flexing.
I got Sean Bean on his knees right here.
Yeah. You can't win.
To answer your question.
That's Ormoff. Yeah, Sean Bean.
Okay.
Spoiler alert, main villain.
Main villain, yeah. You know, you don't think he is, and then you're like, whoa, big reveal. Anyways, so there's so much about it that was just so brilliant to watch the first time around. The second time, I was just excited to watch this movie. That's what it was. I was like, there's all the quips, the lines, this, that. I mean, excuse me, wait. I thought I had to burp. We're good. There's just so much about it that, like, there's not a dull moment. There's not a dull moment. It just goes and goes and goes and goes. Just from the opening scene when you got James Bond going through the ducts. And all the little gimmicks are there, too. Like, they modernized it, but they maintained the little quirks that make, like, a James Bond film. Like, you know, he's just, like, climbing through the air ducts and all that. And you're like, dude, that would collapse. And, like, in real life, it would collapse.
Now, these are Russian-made.
That's true, except the Russian air ducts. It's all, everything's cement. Everything is cement in Russia. And at the time. So you've got all these things. You've got all the gadgets. You've got... that brilliant line from Q when Pierce Brosnan grabs his sandwich and what does he say again?
Don't touch that. It's my lunch.
There you go. Yeah, I knew I was going to fuck up that line. So I was like, you say it.
Sorry about the leg, Q. Ski accident?
Yeah, exactly.
Hunting.
And I love that they're just openly testing out all these weapons in like... A gym, not even a gym, but like an office break room is what it looks like. You know, they're just launching rockets and setting off explosives. I'm like, dude, that makes like gas, like poisonous gas. No one's wearing goggles. No one's wearing goggles. Like maybe a few people are wearing gloves. Like there's no safety procedures. And they've got a car, the worst weapon of all. No, cars are weapons. But you got, like, you just rolled your eyes so hard when I say that. But you just, you know what I mean? Like, you've got this, like, facility that's supposed to be, like, super high tech, and it is because of, like, all the gadgets and stuff, but there are, like, no safety procedures. Anyways.
Yeah, they just squint their eyes and hold their breath. Like, they're fine. They've been doing it for years.
Exactly. No, see, so like I can look past these things because
yes.
The environment, everything, it maintains the charm and maintains the allure of James Bond, but it modernizes it. Just like you said, there's something that just makes it more relevant to the time, or at least I can't imagine what it would have been like to see it at the time when it was in fact so relevant. Like everything about it, the dynamics between people, like the power dynamics and everything. Moneypenny might have been someone who I just like didn't exactly... I don't know. There's something missing there for me. There wasn't enough of that, like, sexual tension where it's like, will they, won't they, when you know they won't they. But, you know, it's like the funny, quirky kind of, like, office HR problem. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Like, Sean Connery and Lois Maxwell. Like, you can't beat that.
You cannot beat that. Even Roger Moore?
Her and Roger Moore. It's good stuff. Yeah, there's definitely just not that. I used the word sass earlier, but Samantha Bond, who played Moneypenny in this film and a few others after, she never really had that oomph.
She's kind of there.
And she has some good lines. She had some good lines in this one. She calls Bond out on his shit. She's like, you know, one day you're going to have to make good on your innuendos.
Yes.
Did I say that word right?
Innuendos.
Innuendos.
Yes. Say it with a British accent, though.
Innuendo.
Wow, that was the worst. Innuendos.
When I was a kid, I would say they're indoor windows.
Indoor.
Gonna make good on your indoor windows. Like, okay.
That's brilliant.
She even says, like, this. I can't remember the exact wording, but
my chair's being all like, wah, wah, wah. Like,
she said something like, this might fall under sexual harassment, but she says it with like a smirk. Yeah. So it's there.
I'm going to start telling people that at work just with a smirk on my face. So see how tight their buttholes get when I say that.
And then you get introduced to, to Moneypenny, of course. Or sorry, M, another M letter.
Just to kind of wrap up on this specific point with, like, you've got such dominating characters, but even with, like I said, like, one bad character can throw off your entire plot, but Moneypenny was not depicted as, like, was not depicted poorly. It's just because of the strength of every single other character in comparison. I would say she just didn't stand out. I don't think it had anything to do with the performance. Maybe there wasn't that synergy between her and Pierce. Like, it didn't seem like they were kind of like, hey, good to see you again. Not that that's like verbatim what they should be saying, but
that's a little too,
you know what I mean?
Modern.
Like, when like Sean Connery and Samantha Bond, is that her name?
No, that's the new one. Maxwell.
Lois Maxwell. Like when they're like making just eye contact, you're like, oh, someone's going to say something funny. But like with those two, you were kind of just like, oh, have they met? Like, do we need to do an introduction? Like, but, yeah, so that was kind of like the only thing that really didn't stand out to me, but
or
stood out to me negatively.
In a Bond film, they almost... Ooh.
That was my water bottle. I apologize.
In a Bond film, they almost strive to have like a classic henchman character. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Red Grant in From Russia with Love. You had Oddjob in Goldfinger. Jaws and Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker and such, and there's been a few sprinkled here and there. It's almost like they try and not fail, but just doesn't reach some heights. Even more recently, they had Inspector, you know, Batista as Mr. Hinks. He had like silver thumbnails. Even before that, Die Another Day, which you haven't seen yet. There's a character named Zhao, and he's got like diamonds embedded into his face. You know,
so
just like
cool.
Yeah, like, they're trying to go for that classic henchman. They never
it's
really
just like,
get
which
there.
Body part are we gonna bedazzle this time?
Yeah,
honestly, they got the jaws, got the eye, got the nails. Should I keep going?
In this film, you get like three like good classic henchman characters. Some don't even get one try. This one gets three. You got General Oromov, who's almost displayed as being the main villain for a large portion of the film. Mm-hmm. You got Boris, who has great lines. He's got great presence, and a great Hawaiian shirt.
Oh, yeah.
And
multiple, I would argue.
Yeah, you got Xenia Onatopp, who is...
What a woman.
Yeah. If I were to die anyway.
Yeah, honestly.
At least I'd die happy.
My God. She committed to the role.
Oh, you know.
She committed.
You like, know that scene in the pool where Xenia and Bond meet up and they're fighting and no more foreplay.
Yeah.
When she's like snaked around his body and he's slamming her into the walls, she broke ribs.
Are you serious?
Famke Janssen broke ribs. She like committed and kept going, you know?
Wow. I love that it's like she broke the ribs, but she kept going while Pierce is like, cut! Begging for his life.
I can't breathe.
No, that's insane. Oh, no, here's the thing. She could have underplayed that so hard. She really could have. She could, like, because that's the thing. It's like this idea of like, you know, like, the female orgasm, it's kind of like, done. But she went like full on. Now, obviously, I'm not going to do an impression of it right now because for obvious reasons. But no, she went all out. And that's what sold that character. Sadistic. No boundaries. Just raw. Totally knows what she loves. And she was acting like that when she was like mowing down all the freaking scientists too at the facility. Scientist Margot. What are they called?
Scientists and technicians.
Yeah. Just says that on their like name tags. Like, well, I'm a scientist.
Yeah, they don't have names.
Even when she's like mowing them down or even just beating anybody up, like, what does she tell Natalia? She's like, wait your turn or something
wait
like that.
Pen.
Wait your turn. Yeah, that's what she's like. She's ready to go, this woman.
Like okay. Yeah. Kill me, please.
I'll be right here. Oh my gosh. No, everything about it is insane. And like, I wish maybe there would have been more Xenia and Natalia interactions. I feel like that could have been interesting. But I'm happy with the ones that there are.
Yeah, speaking of Natalia too, we'll talk on her. She is the main Bond girl in this film. And, you know, her intro, you know, she's not some bikini-clad woman coming out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Bond waking from dreams, thinking he's still in the dream, like with like Pussy Galore or something. And she doesn't have a name like Pussy Galore.
As soon as you were like waking up with like Pussy Galore, I thought for a second you were going to say like pussy in his face. I'm like, whoa, okay.
Kind
of. Guess we're in this like, kind of podcast, huh?
So like, having Goldfinger, he wakes up with pussy in his face.
Yeah.
Pussy Galore. But yeah, I mean, and Natalia, as I just said, doesn't have a spicy name like that either. She's shown very, you know, just
professionally. She's fully clothed.
Sweater, skirt below the knee.
Yeah.
And you know, she's capable. She's intelligent. She's a System One programmer.
Oh yeah.
Her intro is different. But not only is her intro different, her character arc is different. One, she has one. And two, and I'm just speaking on sitting knowledge, I'm fairly certain she has more screen time of just herself, just solo, no Bond around, than any other Bond girl.
And that's what's cool about it, too, is like you actually see, because of that, you see her motivation to join Bond in the cause. It's not just like, he's tall, like, and then she's just gonna go along with whatever the hell. Like, she was in the actual attack. She's the only one who survived that attack. That is traumatizing. That is shell shock level traumatizing. Like, that is it. That is enough motivation for her to actively try to seek out to destroy these people, versus if he just like met her at a bar or at the beach or somewhere convenient where like hot women just hang out. I bumped my mic, so that was anyways. He didn't meet her under those circumstances. There was an actual reason for her to contribute to the cause. She had those set of skills, which is awesome, but there is a reason, there's a motivation, and that, again, creates such a convincing character. Like, there's a reason she's in this movie, not just, like, obviously there's a little, like, kissy-kissy that goes on eventually.
Sure, sure.
But that's because we all want it to, you know? So,
yeah, it's not like she's fucking ugly or anything like that.
She's like... God forbid. God forbid. Yeah. And if, yeah, that's funny.
A capable woman and a Bond character, just make sure she's ugly. Now,
that they don't. And a man. Sorry.
That's a man, baby. No, they don't do that here. Another thing I like about Natalia, I'm going to get into how she actually saves the day, really, in this film, which is also pretty cool. But it's the personality of her. Yes, she's smart and witty and quippy. But, like, it's definitely her, Skorupko. What is her first name? Isabella Skorupko, the actress. Her and Pierce Brosnan's chemistry is great. But as characters, the way they get along, they're flirting, they're laughing with each other, you know. I just love their banter back and forth throughout. It's top tier for me. And she is my favorite Bond girl for all those things I mentioned earlier, but for the fact that she, in a sense, saves the day. This film about technology and using satellites to create EMP blasts so they can rob banks and such. And she is able to use her skills established earlier in the film to change the access codes, to change the trajectory of these things. You know, technology fighting technology. Yes, essentially, she saves the day.
Yeah.
Boris, being the sneaky guy he is, he breaks her codes and because he's invincible and gets things back on track. Bond, being the blunt instrument he is, just takes a big old stick and shoves it in the gears.
Yeah, I love that. It's just like, we know James Bond is not smart enough to know how to code, but he is just, what do you call it? What's the word? It's not scrappy. He's resourceful. So he just sees it and he's like, man, do stop. And just fucking jams that shit in there. Like, all good, saving the day again. Like, it's obvious, and that's the thing, is it's like, it's not a less or more or whatever, like, you know, who's smarter in the situation. Like, obviously, he's 007, he's, what is it, MI6, right? Okay, he's MI6, like, the man's skilled. Yes, he's a talented individual. But both of them working together reaped excellent results. And if it weren't for either of them, like, I don't know, there's just... I gesticulate. I'm going to hit the mic. I think we're okay with this.
I'm going to tie you to the chair. You look like Daniel Craig in Casino Royale.
Jesus Christ. I wouldn't. No, I'm joking. I've seen it since. What was I going to say? Regardless of the fact that this is a James Bond film, you can't just take Natalia and you can't just take Bond and put them separately and be like, oh, this person saved this. No, it was a team effort. And that's what I love about that. Even in, like, when Sean Bean, I don't know his name in the movie. What was it?
Alec Trevelyan.
I'm going to call him Alec. So when Alec has a gun up to James's face and he's like, girl, shoot him. And she's like, do it. I love that. And she's like, I don't care. Take him. And, you know, she's like calling him out on their bluff. Like, just her delivery is so convincing.
Because he does that to her earlier.
Does he?
Oh, yeah, yeah. When they're in the train.
Okay.
And he's got a gun on her, and he says, go ahead, she means nothing to me. And then after he saves her and all that jazz, they end up hooking up, and while they're laying in bed, she's like, did you mean that? And he's like, yes, I had to call their bluff. And then she laughs and, like, hits him with the pillow and stuff. I love that stuff.
I must have not been paying attention during that.
Okay, yeah, you're like, they're having sex.
Yeah, I was like,
Later in the movie, when the things are flipped and the roles are flipped, she's like, shoot him. He means nothing to me. He gives her a look like, this isn't a bluff here.
That's so funny. They will shoot him. Look at that. Look at me learning. The novice. No, that's so crazy. Okay, cool. I love that. The back and forth. It's great. It doesn't just begin and end in a scene. It's extended throughout the movie. That's brilliant. This is just such a small detail, but I love her smile. She's smiling. She's actually smiling at Pierce. It's not like
It's real.
Real. I believe it's true. Yeah, like there's something about it that's just so charming. She's so stinking cute too. Like, she's just with her haircut and everything.
It's not
beautiful.
Fucking ugly.
I mean, gorgeous, beautiful, but also she's so stinking cute, you know? That's what I'm saying. The characters in this film are brilliant. And I'm not even speaking just from James Bond perspective. It's just an objectively great movie.
Question, while we're on the subject of characters, I got two more character questions for you. We're talking how hench people top tier in this movie for me, and it sounds like for you, Bond girl top tier.
Mm-hmm.
What about Trevelyan? What about Alec Trevelyan as the villain? You know, former MI6, 006, damn it, and you know, Bond's equal, but mm-hmm. on the opposite side. You know,
his foil, I think, is the term.
How is he for you? Is he a top tier villain?
I'd like to hear your take on this first, because mine's like a little silly, and I need to be educated on the matter a little bit more. So,
oh yeah, I mean, he's really high up there for me personally. Mm-hmm. There's just like not much to complain about. Sean Bean in general, he's one of those actors. If I see he's in something, I'm gonna check it out.
Mm-hmm.
But as a villainous presence in this film, he's great. He's got an iconic look with like the scars on his face.
Mm-hmm.
He's got some great lines. He one of my favorite villain plots. But I don't want to say there's anything missing. I mean, he's probably my second favorite Bond villain, maybe three. I'd have to sit down and be one-on-one with myself and Jesus and these Bond villains to come up with a truthful answer.
That's what he calls me.
Yeah.
Jesus. No.
Because my favorite's probably Le Chiffre in Casino. But anyway, or Goldfinger. One of the villains are my favorites.
But that's what I love, is like you're constantly reevaluating your scale. Like
always.
It's great. Like you'll just be eating broccoli and you're like, broccoli, Albert, Bond, and then like just get into like what was your favorite drink of all the movies kind of thing.
Sure.
Like and just rank all of those.
Yeah.
But
and it always changes and always will. And I'm fine with that. So saying Trevelyan's up there, he is. He definitely has my favorite death of a Bond villain.
Yeah.
That one's rough.
That's rough.
Not even as a favorite death of a Bond villain, just like favorite like movie comeuppance.
Yeah. Because he doesn't even like die on impact.
No.
Like, he's still breathing.
He will eventually.
Oh, but he does. Yeah. But we can't confirm that final blow killed him. He probably stayed down there for like a while before it just started to take in that direction.
You know what? When I was a kid and I would pretend and make up my own Bond stories and play with like G.I. Joes, I would make a story called GoldenEye 2. And Boris was the main villain, and he didn't actually die, but neither did Trevelyan. He lived too.
Wow.
He crawled out of that rubble.
With one arm and no legs, just dragging his own little torso.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scars all over. He's like, you scarred me even more. And then it's a whole, damn, that'd be good.
I believe Boris didn't die because I just liked him too much. You know, he's like, he's not dead.
Right. And the way he died too, just that stance just forever sealed in history. Boris is, first off, his name is Boris, so immediately I'm sold. And it's just everything about him, the like creepy little freaking, like, what's that riddle? It's like they're right in front of you.
And can open very large doors.
Yeah, like that whole thing is brilliant. Because he's just a little, he's a little guy, but he's got a big brain, and he's got crazy intentions on all fronts.
He's got crazy teeth, long teeth.
Very long teeth, yeah, mostly teeth.
True story.
And his little glasses, too. I really like those.
True story. I was in eighth grade, and we took a school trip to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
We saw, like, a Broadway show and such. When the show let out, we were walking. I don't remember where exactly we were walking, but there was a theater, a smaller theater on Broadway for a play. I don't remember the name of the play, but it was starring Alan Cumming, who is the actor who played mm-hmm. Boris. And as we were like about to get past the door, a few people walked out, including Alan Cumming. I met him, I guess, because as it was a passing, but he like, we made eye contact. He said, hello. And that was it. And I was like,
he made eye contact with you?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, Boris.
Oh, my God. Did you say that?
Boris. What? No.
Oh, that would have been great. That would have been awesome. But I'm sure that was awesome.
I was starstruck.
That's amazing.
I was like, that's Floop from Floop's Fooglies from Spy Kids.
Oh my God, it was, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, him. Alan Cumming. That's the thing. I know that name, but I just always forget what he's been in.
Oh, he's in a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
he's great. Is. He's a chameleon. Brilliant. He's a chameleon actor. He can be in anything. And just good. He's changing all over the place. He's not Russian, believe it or not.
He convinced me. I mean, I knew Alan Cumming wasn't, but like, you know, yeah. That's great. I'm trying to think of anything else. Well, here's my thing on Alec.
I asked you, and then you're like, you tell me. I'm like, all right, let's move on.
Yeah. No, but you know what? Like, hearing your take on it kind of just made me take it a little bit more seriously. Now, here's the thing. I haven't seen a Bond film in a very long time. And the thing about Bond villains is they're caricatures of villains to a certain extent. Or not their caricatures, but they are easy to turn into caricatures. They all have like their own little, I don't know, je ne sais quoi, you know?
Especially like, now for you, like we've seen Thunderball, we'll revisit it.
Yeah.
But the villain Largo, he's got the eye patch, you know?
And I mean, even like modern Rami Malek, like just, this
is the point I was going to make. The point I was going to make is back then in 1965, you know, a villain with the eye patch. Okay, but now if they do that, they're like, oh, that's like a trope.
Yeah,
well, it started there.
Yeah, you know? No, you're right. That's exactly what
they're caricatures now, but back then, presently, they weren't caricatures.
Bad guys had eye patches. That's just what happened when you left prison. They were like, all right, you got to keep this one on, okay?
Yeah, that's why I had to pump your brakes with Rami Malek, because I'm like, that's not what I'm saying at all.
Okay, for sure. Because what I was going to say was like, a villain in a Bond film is always going to have some thing, whether it's bleached hair or like a scar or like something.
And if they don't, it feels
Hulk,
like
I don't know. Yeah,
yeah, like, it feels like something's missing. There's the movie Quantum of Solace. Mm-hmm. The villain Dominic Green. He got nothing.
I don't even remember him.
Exactly. Yeah. He's got nothing. He don't play checkers.
He doesn't play checkers. He sucked toast for breakfast. I'm in. I'm sorry. Okay.
I've grown to like him a lot, but when I first saw it and I was like 17 years old, I'm like, this guy sucks. But he's got a cool plot. But besides
that. Oh, he's the water. Oh my God. Oh, yeah. That one's literally like, we're going to poison the water system. Like
they're going to hold literally the water ransom. And, like, cause droughts and
So, yeah, that was my biggest complaint about that movie. We'll get to that another day. But, but that's the thing with Sean Bean. Like, again, I haven't seen a Bond film in a while, so I forget that about the Bond world, is that the villains are a little out there. You know, they all have, like, that kind of captivating factor about them. And, you know, when Sean Bean comes out into the light and his scar is revealed, I chuckled a little bit because I was like, what the fuck? Where did he get it, I wonder? You know? And it was just one of those things where, like, I don't know, they haven't seen each other in how long at that point?
9 years.
9 years. If a friend once upon a time, he's more than a friend, but that I didn't know got shot in front of me, and then 9 years went by, and then they just came out of the, you know, shadows and into the light and had a big scar, I'd be like, whoa, what happened to you? You know, I wouldn't immediately be like, oh, you are mad at me, you know? Like, I would be like, where you been? What's going on, dude? Like, so that's the thing. As soon as he came out with his very big scar, I was like, what? Oh, okay. I get it. So we're all on the same page.
I'm pretty sure Bond pieced it together fairly quick.
But I'm smarter than him. So I shouldn't. So it's amazing that he could piece it together.
Considerably.
No. It was just one of those moments where, and here's the thing. All of these thoughts happened within like 0.5 seconds where I was like, funny, silly, what? Weird. Oh, okay. I get it. But no, he was, I mean, performance-wise, he did a great job. The fights were really convincing. It was
my God. White knuckle at the end there.
White knuckle?
Like you're just like gripping so hard.
Yes.
Like, holy shit.
Yes, absolutely.
There's no music. They're just beating the shit out of each other.
Exactly. Everything about that is just so captivating and immersive, and it works. It is brilliant. And you can't do that with an unconvincing villain. He's convincing. You know he's bad to the bone, with good reason. You know, like, there's just so much that every single one of these characters has just such a great backstory. You know what I mean? Like, you understand. Well, I mean, I kind of want to know what Xenia's deal is. Like, how, why, where, who, you know? Like, I want to know all the WH questions. But, you know, I feel like there's just so much context for the characters that matter in terms of driving the plot forward. Like, it just, yeah, and he's one of those. And again, Sean Bean's a brilliant actor, very convincing. I'm going to use that word over and over again. Convincing, convincing, convincing. And if you can convince me, you did it.
Mm-hmm.
End of story. I'm trying to think.
You know, you just mentioned Xenia and her backstory. We don't have a backstory, but we have her.
We have her right here.
Yeah. we have her comeuppance. And her comeuppance was a great inspiration to what the hell is that noise?
It's a plane.
Oh, yeah. Is it a plane?
No. Oh.
Yeah, it's a plane.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We kind of live semi close to an airport.
Like, yeah.
It's 20 minutes away, but
that's right.
Whatever.
There's a military base too somewhere around here, isn't there?
It's at the airport.
Yeah. Good job, Margo. Where else would it be? Okay.
That's where it goes.
Yeah.
So if we hear an occasional plane, we'll know what's up.
Let's count how many planes we hear.
So we don't have Xenia's backstory, but damn it, we have her comeuppance. Yes, and her comeuppance is has very great significance to our show. You know, she gets dragged away by that crashing helicopter into the Y of that tree, and she gets what she got and gets suffocated, squished to death.
Mm-hmm.
And Bond quips, "She always did enjoy a good squeeze."
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, that's good.
That's good stuff.
That's our podcast.
Yeah,
name.
We like abruptly turned our heads and looked at each other when that line came up and
fist bumped.
We just hear a like fist bump. We did. We did. Yeah. We did one of the slapping bumps, yeah, whatever you want to call that. I'm cool. You want to do a slapping bump?
real quick, are you familiar with the term of Bond ally?
Bond ally, like not a main character, but like helps him along the way kind
of
thing.
There's, you got your Bond villains, Bond
Felix
girls.
Felix is one, yes.
Felix is a Bond ally. This movie has, has a few, but like a couple like solo outings with two that I can think of. You got Wade and you got Valentin Joukovsky.
Who? Yes. Wait. Is this the one who was like
Hagrid?
Mm-hmm. Oh, strangling a cat, right? Yeah. That
strangling a cat. Yeah, take a hike.
I love that. It was like, who? Hagrid strangling a cat. Ah, yes.
Which is also a potential name for the podcast.
Yeah, down the line.
Yeah, strangling a cat.
It'll be the spinoff.
Yeah.
We just, strangle cats.
What were your thoughts on Wade? Because he does come back at least one other time.
Kind of random at first, but then when he comes back, you're like, oh, okay, for sure. So this is what you do. Like, you kind of pop in when it's not needed, but needed. No. When it's needed, but like, just late enough that cool stuff happens, you know? Yeah,
it's almost like when he's needed, he doesn't show up.
Yeah, like, you know, he's kind of like, I'm on my way, but then he, like, goes into, like, a pet store and, like, looks at the fish too long, you know? Like, he knows Bond's got it. That's what I mean. Like, he has faith in this man, Jimmy Bond, and, he just kind of lets him do his thing, I guess, is the way I would interpret it. Or he's just incompetent and not good at his job. But he did deploy the Marines hiding in the bushes and stuff. In the bushes, like just in the grass.
They looked like bushes.
Oh, no, he was brilliant. I mean, here's the thing. He was brilliant. I really enjoyed that whole character. When he caught the keys in his hat, I looked at you. I was like, oh, can we do that? Like,
you did.
It was really cool. Because he like took his hat off and went chink. And then I wish he had put it back on his head and then just driven away without using the keys. That would have been cool. But then he fishes him out and then does the responsible thing. I just think everything about him was really cool. I love his candor. I love his vernacular. Like, he just had just an air about him. And he came in, he was peppered in perfectly. Like, I just think, you know, he provided just the right amount of relief, but also the right amount of, like, structure. Like, oh, remember, there's a big, big, big man watching you while you're doing all this stuff, you know?
And what did you think of Valentin?
Who's
Hagrid.
Oh, Hagrid. Sorry.
Robbie Coltrane, rest in peace.
Yeah. Oh, is he dead?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm learning so much on this podcast. I'm sorry. I don't really have much of an opinion about him. I just really like that scene with strangling the cat. And I love that Minnie Driver.
That's his only scene.
I love that Minnie Driver was there. I think I was more focused on her than I was on him, to be honest. I really love her and everything she is. I think she, even in those teeny tiny little moments, you know, if she has a minor role, like, she's just really good. I really like her.
He will return. He has a little bit more to do and a little bit more of a relationship with Bond in the next one. This one, they're definitely not on the same page. They are enemies. And I always thought he was a bad guy until I was older and I realized, oh, he actually kind of helps Bond. He sets him up with Yanis, the meetup at the statue, at the statue cemetery.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to touch on those two characters, too.
I will say, now that I think about it more, like, just when he's, like, shooting at his dick and stuff, like, that
he's trying
that
to shoot at his knee.
Well, he
almost... Then he does point at his...
He does.
PP7.
Yeah, he does his PP7. The seven to his double O's. I don't know, that whole interaction was really... Again, it was fun. It was just fun to watch. It was spooky and scary, but it was fun. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's... Next time we watch it, I'll pay more attention to him, because I really didn't... I was just excited that I knew that it was Hagrid. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, oh, that's Hagrid, right? And you were like, yes. I'm like, and then I ate a snack. I don't know. I guess I was a little bit distracted during that moment, that's for sure.
Amongst the Bond community, a big point of contention in this film is the music.
Mm.
I believe the composer, it's pronounced Eric Serra, S-E-R-R-A. He definitely went the more experimental route with the music of this film. And it's very controversial, like I said, amongst the Bond community. And more people lean to hating it because it just sounds bizarre at points.
Why do you use the word controversial?
Because it is so experimental. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they use sleigh bells in this soundtrack, damn it.
Are they out of their minds?
Yeah. Because, you know, it could go from being a little more, like, modern and, like, with the Bond theme. Or, you know, you got, like, it sounds very, like... yes, the Russian thought of, like, and having sleigh bells and snow and being like communism and having it be like boom, 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 tsh, boom, 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 boom. And, but then, you know, they'll be driving in the hills and it'll be like, bow, bow, dun, 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 dun. That's the next girl. You know, it's just very like... In my mind, it's very, like, free-flowing, uh-huh. Like, experimental, like...
Yeah. It felt like I was in a submarine,
you
know? Like, you boom, know, or, like, you know when you're, like, in a big tank, like, a big metal tank, and someone goes boom, boom on the outside, and you kind of hear it? Now, I don't know under which circumstances you would be in this tank, but you are, so...
Recording music,
yeah, that's fine. Exactly. Like, it's just the big cylinders, like, it's just a like that, which... Okay, here's what it is for me. It fit for the movie. It fit for the movie brilliantly. Yeah. Because, again, communism, Russians, the satellite, it's not that they're underground most of the time, but they're definitely contained somewhere, you know? Like, the facility, I guess, is all that comes to mind right now.
The archives, when they're, like, in the library, scene.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, there's that great jump at the very beginning at the dam. They're certainly outdoors there.
Yeah.
That's
but
done,
you know what I mean?
Way.
There's a lot of that, like, walls, boundaries, limits, sure. This, that. Very contained.
The cradle,
you know?
Being inside that lair at the end. And mm-hmm. Even fighting Bond and Trevelyan at the tip of the satellite, mm-hmm. You know, the base at the bottom of that ladder. Although they're outside at this point, it is so tight and so contained.
Yeah.
You got, like, 3-foot radius of foot space.
Yeah.
And there's two guys fighting. It's like so nail biting. But right. Yeah, it feels confined. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing, is like, okay, so from the movie perspective, it fits. It works. It adds to the atmosphere and it just supports the movie. It doesn't consume it, but it supports it. From like just a listening standpoint, it just sounds like a shitty ringtone. Like it just you know, like it doesn't sound like, it's not something I would just put on and be like, like, I just don't want to hear that. I wouldn't, like, I know you like it when we're driving around and stuff. I know you like to put on like a soundtrack, like whatever movie we just recently saw, you'll just put on the soundtrack. And 9 times out of 10, it's great. Like that one, to be honest, you haven't put it on in a while. We also have not been driving around a lot. Small detail. But like, I don't think I'd want to listen to it unless I want to like reimagine the movie. But like, yeah. I wouldn't put it on for, like, mood music, you know, unless I'm, like, in a submarine, you know. It's just, like, There's nothing about that that, you know, is particularly, like, pleasing to me.
Sure.
But, again, from the... It really works for the movie. It's a good soundtrack, which is what it is. It's a soundtrack, you know?
I think the score gives this film its identity. I mean, there's so many other aspects to it, but this movie would feel so different if it did not have that score. It gives it this flavoring that it wouldn't otherwise have. It makes it so unique in that way.
Do you think it contributes to kind of the change in pace that this movie brings, or like the relevancy of this movie?
Expand? What do you mean?
Like, you were talking about how this movie was very much, like, not controversial, and now I'm, like, stuck on that word, but different from, like...
Previous. Yeah. Bringing Bond into, like, the modern era. It definitely was, we need to freshen things up, and it does, but to some in a detrimental way. Like, there are people who hate this score. And they're like, this sounds bizarre. I want my
fanfare or whatever.
Yeah,
orchestra.
Yeah. I want some of the old school stuff. Huh. And we ultimately do get that in like the following films. And you know, don't get me wrong, I almost prefer those things. But like as far as GoldenEye goes, man, I am different. I will play that music in the car. You just weren't around. I was playing that score today.
There you go.
Playing the GoldenEye suite.
I'm not surprised.
It has,
but that's great, though, you know?
And I love that you said it's just not satisfying to you, because this score contains one of the most satisfying sounds to me. And it's like, I can't even do it.
Do your best. We all want to hear
it's like,
it. That's where I'm like, I feel like I'm in a submarine, like that.
It's actually a tambourine. It's like the, but then they pitch it down to like super bass. It's like,
wow.
Yeah, I love that. I fucking love that sound. I think it's ingrained. It's like, you know, when you hear a lullaby and you're like, ah, soothed, because that's what you would hear to be lulled to sleep as a baby.
Soundtrack.
Oh yeah.
That's great.
That'd be good. Oh, and you know, really good. Also I do love unwanted things, and the fact that a lot of people hate this score, I'm like, I fucking love it.
Yeah. You really do enjoy that.
I do. And like, like a large portion of people don't like this thing that I like. That makes me like it so much more.
You're like, well, I do.
Yeah. I don't go out of my way to like it. Like, I already did like it, but the fact that others don't, I'm like,
reinforces it.
It makes it better. Like, we'll get into it eventually, but Die Another Day. A lot of people's least favorite Bond film, if not down there, because it is silly.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking love that movie. That's top 10
is
for me.
Is that with Halle?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Cool. I'm excited to see that one.
Yeah, we'll touch on that another day. Yeah. We'll die another day with Die Another Day.
Look at that tagline. It flows right out.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So I was going to ask you, I don't remember.
You're going to ask me nothing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you something. It'll pop up randomly. Like,
I wanted to just touch base on two particular action scenes. We've kind of danced around a couple, but the opening scene, the dam jump, one, and then we got to talk about the tank chase.
Yeah.
That dam jump, how'd that make you feel?
Oh, but brilliant way to start a movie. Brilliant. Just because, I'm not afraid of heights. I like to jump off buildings. I don't do that. My knees hurt. I love that kind of stuff. I love seeing people do stunts. I love seeing people, like, I'm not going to do it, so you go do it because I'm too tired to do it. But I think it was just such a dynamic way to start it. And the pause in the jump is insane. Someone actually had to do that. Like, that's awesome. They didn't use a dummy. You could see in the hands and the this and the that. Like, that's a real human being jumping off of that dam. I love that it was in Switzerland. As you told me, I am Swiss, by the way. So just context on that. If anything is Swiss, and I'm Swiss Croatian. So if there's Switzerland or Croatia involved, I'm sold.
And not like.
Oh, not like 23andMe Swiss Croatian. Like my birth certificate is in Croatian and my passport is Swiss. So like I'm like set. But with that, like when you said like, oh yeah, that's in Switzerland, I'm like, oh, that makes it 10 times more amazing. But even just without knowing that, how quickly it happens. Like, you know, there's a buildup, but it's like, boom, 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 and he's jumping. And it's like happening, and you get to watch it. And it's so calming in the chaos. And then as soon as he goes down, and he goes like, clip, clip. And then he like drags himself down a little bit, or whatever he shoots to like pull himself back in. It's like a part of me was, just because I've watched too many Looney Tunes, I was like, what if it just lets go? And he goes, pew, and just gets like slingshot over the mountain. How many? 001, 002, 003. Finally, they got it. But yeah, so also that was a great goofy. I didn't catch that. Yeah.
Would you, because, you know, go to Switzerland every now and then, mm-hmm. would you ever dare to make that jump?
Hell yeah.
Because people can.
Yeah.
It's like a tourist thing. Mm-hmm. You can jump off that dam.
I would totally want to do bungee jumping. I'd jump out of a plane. I know that we've talked about it and I'm like, I'm okay. I don't really want to do it. Like, I'm not going to seek it out. But if it's like handed to me, yeah, why not? Just jump. What's the worst that could happen? You die and then you don't have to worry about it. You know, like that's it. But I was going to ask you, because knowing your feelings about jumping off stuff and all tell me about your big old feelings.
I get nervous when I look down when I'm taking a leak.
Yeah, it's just too long.
I am horribly afraid of heights, and I don't seek adrenaline either. I don't like roller coasters for both those reasons, heights and the adrenaline. Like I just like ugh, no thanks. But for the bondness of it, the bond moment, I think I probably would. Mm-hmm. When I'm there and I look down, I'd be like, haha, no.
But have you seen that video of like the guy bungee jumping and the guys who are in charge? Like, you know, they got him strapped in and everything. But as they jump, they like throw the rope and they're like, wait, we forgot the rope.
This mess with these guys. Yeah, I've seen that stuff.
That's so good. That's brilliant.
So
like you appreciate it, but it's not, you weren't like, yeah, let's go do that.
Yeah,
like,
no, right, no, off the never. Okay. That's why I like stunts in movies like this. Like it's the escapism. Like I'm not going to go do that, but watching this movie lets me feel like I did. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's the easy, cheap way out.
That's great. That's the American way.
You want to do this jump? Like, no, I've seen it. The tank chase. That is an iconic action scene in this, in Bond in general. One thing I loved about it, especially that I noticed it always, but I really took it in this time. There was no CGI at all. That tank really burst through that wall. It bursts through all these walls in St. Petersburg. You know, this awesome chase scene is occurring and not a computer effect in sight. It just felt good. Yeah. Felt like lost art. Because if that shit was made today, hell, I'm pretty sure they did stuff like that in No Time to Die.
They would literally film that entire movie in a green room, green screen. It's not even a green screen anymore. It's an entire freaking room. That day, just paint green. They're like, oh, it's perfect. The set's ready. To this day, you're saying like practical effects trump special effects every single time. I would argue, because even if the practical effects are shit, it's so much better than shitty special effects. Shitty special effects is like you couldn't even like get a balloon to fly by itself. You have to CGI some goddamn thing. Like you couldn't just go to the dollar store and figure that out. No, you had to CGI it. I'm giving a random example from a movie that does not exist, but
like, I mean, we saw Death on the Nile. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene where they're on smaller boats with sailboats. They're on little sailboats, and the sails were CGI.
They were
like, you couldn't get a boat with a sail.
Timothy Chalamet going around a pole. Like, in that Willy Wonka movie, they CGI'd that. I'm sorry, Tom Cruise jumped off a cliff with a bike. You can teach Timothy Chalamet how to do a little twirl. Like, I think we're good. And don't give me that crap about like, oh, but the coat needs to blow a certain. No, it doesn't. That's the beginning and end of that.
They got string. They could just.
Yeah, just make it. Yeah, exactly. Put him on rope on strings. So I was gonna say, put him on ropes. Like, string him up.
Kind
of. That's bad. But
the tank, practical, though, like, exactly. It just felt good. Felt good seeing that, and it real is destruction.
Explosive. Yeah. It just came out. Like, that's it.
And the theme's blaring.
Yeah, I got a little wah, wah in there, like at that brass, you know?
That's when Natalia falls for him. She's like, holy shit, this guy's smiling. So chasing like, after me, trying to save me with he's a fucking
like,
tank.
Men cat kidnapping her, and she's just like, ha ha, look at him. Like, it's great. She's Swedish. But, oh, I was going to ask you a question. Again, I'll keep wanting to ask you questions, but I'm too busy with myself. I don't remember. The tank, the chase. Oh, the train.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What'd you think of that?
Love that train. Always have. In the video game, that is a level, is the train. You go from one end to the other.
That's awesome.
And it does everything. Like, even to the point where you have to get your laser watch and, like...
That's so
blast off the little things around the grate so you can get out and you finish it and Natalia's still like at the damn computer and you're like 20 seconds come on.
What does she say to him? Does she snap at him?
I don't remember. Yeah, she does.
Yeah,
she's cool.
She's busy.
She's trying to figure out where they're hiding. Yeah.
No, that's awesome.
And she does. She knows they're in Cuba through that. But, man, that's also nail-biting. Like, that explosion's about to happen. And they get out of there right in the nick of time with also a real explosion, not CGI, as we were just saying.
Cool.
But I love the look of the train. It looks like just this iron-clad face.
Looks like the Maori sculptures or whatever, the Easter Island sculptures.
Oh, kind of.
Yeah, but just, like, on a train.
Yeah.
To slap that on. Angry man, big nose. Like, yeah. Love that.
Yeah. Super stylized. Love that layer also of the train, the armored train.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. And fuck, Trevelyan, I swear too much, Trevelyan is wearing an ascot in that scene. I'm fairly certain. And Bond was wearing an ascot earlier. See, they're the antithesis.
You are big on ascots, my love.
I have an ascot.
Yeah, there you go. That's good stuff. Everything is just so stylized. The train, the inside of the train, everything, the sets to the costumes, to the actual practical effects, to the... just props, everything, locations. It's so stylized. It's so convincing. Everything about it just is just woven together into this like tapestry of a masterpiece. It's awesome. It's exciting. There's love. It sounds like I'm wrapping this up. I'm just kind of saying, just from like you describing the train and like just thinking about the set inside the train and everything, like, you can't think of one thing and not think of 20 other things when you're thinking about this movie. Sure. You can't just stop at one. You're like, oh, but then this and then that and this and that. And like it all just works together so well, so brilliantly.
And you know, this is a Bond for new generation. You know, you had Pierce Brosnan making his debut in this film. Did you know he was originally supposed to be Bond in a previous film?
Didn't he have a contract with, was it Blue Steel or something?
Yes.
That's the...
It's with Remington Steele.
Remington Steele. Blue Steele was, what's his name, Ben Stiller?
Yeah, yeah. Zoolander. He was in the show Remington Steele and ultimately got canceled, even though he still had years on his contract. Hey, the show got canceled. Well, he got cast as James Bond for Living Daylights in 1987. Well, when the announcement of, hey, this guy's going to be Bond, Remington Steele's going to be Bond, it picked up popularity in the studio or the television studio. Brought back Remington Steele. They canceled it, but now they're like, hey, there's buzz. Let's bring him back.
Idiots.
Well, he was contractually obligated still to be Remington Steele and do that show, so he couldn't be Bond anymore. And he did Remington Steele for one more season, and they canceled it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Could you imagine? What's the logic behind that? It's like, oh, okay.
The money.
Yeah. No, but it's dumb, because, like, oh, Daniel Craig's going to be Bond. Let's keep him onto this show that no one was watching. Why didn't this work out? Like, well, because of your original idea. Like, literally did exactly what you did the first time. It failed. You tried it again. Still failed. Because it's not him. It's you. It's you, like, production company.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
After a few years, they went with Timothy Dalton. Mm-hmm. And after 1989's License to Kill, there was a lull. There was a lull of Bond between 89 and 95. It was the longest hiatus until recently. And they just didn't know what direction they wanted to take it. And at the point when they were finally picking it up, Timothy Dalton, he was ready to move on, and he did. So there was a plan to do a third Timothy Dalton Bond film. It was not going to be GoldenEye, what we got. But things changed, and Pierce Brosnan got the role. I've read that other actors were up for consideration, but considering he was already cast previously, and he got, it was just like a no-brainer, if I'm to assume. This is his first outing, and my favorite outing. I think he might perform as Bond better in later films, but I think this is his best film, does that make sense, as Bond. But his performance is a little better later, and especially in Tomorrow Never Dies, and even World's Not Enough. And I think he's like just so settled into the role when he comes in to Die Another Day. He is Bond at that point, you know what I mean? Like he's just so comfortable as Bond, and then he didn't get to do it anymore. I think they should make a new Bond film and do whatever they want to do, right? But I think they should make a secondary Bond film. They don't have to have one at a time. Amazon owns MGM. They could do an Amazon show of James Bond, like a short series, and I want old man Bond. I want Pierce Brosnan back. 70 years old, James Bond, kicking it. I want it. He's my favorite Bond. When I close my eyes at night and I think of James Bond, I think of Pierce Brosnan. Okay. If you called me out on the street, like, who's James Bond? I'd be like, Pierce.
I'd be like, Daddy. Wow. Yeah. That's the thing, too, is like, this is from the novice perspective. This is something I always really appreciate about the nostalgic take that you have on these things. You have all these ideas. You know what you want to see. And I don't think there are as many movies that are under so much scrutiny as the James Bond films, because this fan base, they know what they want. They know what makes sense. You think about these things. You think about these things critically. There are older fans. There are newer fans. There's a spectrum of fandom, and I don't even want to call them fans, like connoisseurs, you know what I mean? Like, because that's what it is. It stems back from so long ago, and there are so many films. You have such a huge camp to please, and you can't just throw whatever at the wall. You gotta listen to the people. You gotta listen to the people who are supporting this and who are invested in this and who love this, you know? And hearing all your ideas and everything that you've got around this stuff is just makes me, it makes me super happy, but it makes me really upset on your behalf, because, like, I know that I'm curious as to where they're going to take it from here. Sure. Knowing that we are going through not a lull, but, like, there's no movie in sight currently.
There's no,
right?
And there won't be for some time. But, you know, that's also what's good about the Bond community, is it is very open, almost welcoming. Unlike other fandoms where they're like, no, this is mine, and you suck at it.
Yeah. No new members. You're like, God damn it, man.
Bond, I like it too. The Bond community seems very open and welcoming to just conversation, new ideas.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they all got jackets.
I will say, that's a great way to put it. I will say, I'll never forget this, when we went to go see No Time to Die at the end of the film. There's just, again, the audience was there's so many different people. And one of them was, we saw this old dude and his wife walking out of the theater, like, you know, walking down the seats, down the aisle. And, they're going, you know, credits are rolling. We're sticking around just in case. And, the wife just goes, there, you saw it. You happy now? It's just like, and you know, he was, He just wanted to see it. Well, I mean, you know, I don't know how he felt after the movie, but, you know, he wanted to see it. And he saw it, and he was happy that he got to see it, I guess. You know, that, and that guy has probably been around, like, he's probably been, he was old, man. Like, that was, this was an old dude. And
he saw Dr. No.
He saw Dr. No when it came out with his kids. You know, like, he just, like,
it just goes to show that James Bond has different perspectives.
Yeah.
And she's the wife.
You're happy now.
Yeah, the wife definitely had one.
Nothing helps you set into your happiness. Like someone saying, you're happy now. Like, God.
Now, all that being said, GoldenEye, we got like the nostalgic perspective and you got a newcomer perspective. Where does this film fit in? Should it stay with the people who loved it growing up, or could newcomers find enjoyment and accept this movie?
So this is pretty much kind of where we're going with this episode and what we want to establish, right? Like, just can a novice viewer enjoy this alongside the nostalgic viewer? Is it just nostalgic? Is it just novice? My verdict is novice and nostalgic, for sure. It's just an objectively great movie. There is no need to know who is who beforehand. You go in and you can enjoy it. Now, you know, everybody's got opinions is what I'm trying to say. Everybody's got opinions and some people.
Different tastes.
I'm going to stick with opinions because some people have a lot of opinions. And you got tastes and opinions that play a factor. So now, am I saying this movie is for everyone? No, but I think a new introductory Bond viewer, a novice viewer, can enjoy this as much, if not more, than a nostalgic viewer, 100%. What about you?
Oh, yeah. I should have started with you with this one. I was just feeling spicy.
The one that's going to reaffirm all her previous beliefs on the matter.
This will change it.
The spicy one, goddamn.
GoldenEye is the perfect introductory James Bond film, this or Casino Royale. And the only reason I go against Casino Royale, and this is minute, but it is a longer sit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a longer film.
Well, we're not comparing it to Casino Royale or anything.
Certainly not. I'm just saying, as like, if I'm speaking to myself, I'm to introduce somebody to James Bond, what's the perfect Bond film to introduce them with? It's either GoldenEye or Casino Royale. And I would go GoldenEye over it, because it has it all. That's why.
Yep.
It has it all. And so does Casino. But GoldenEye has personality. Mm-hmm. It has great action. It has a great Bond girl, great villains, great locations, great music. like, what more could you?
Oh, you stink!
It has sleigh bells, damn it. Yeah. To me, it has it all. I'm biased, sure, but I think, as you said, objectively, it's not even biased. Fact.
We agree on this. Like, I, as a novice viewer, I'm like, I want to see this movie. As a nostalgic viewer, you're like, I want to see this movie. So we shake on it, and we're like, novice and nostalgic.
During our recent viewing, you know, I've seen this movie 1,000 times, and I'm sitting there. And you looked over at me and you're like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm watching the movie. Like, I was so sucked
in. I thought he was mad at me.
I was just I forgot you were there.
Yeah.
I'm watching GoldenEye. I was so sucked in. I was probably like, my eyes were probably like glazed over. My mouth was like slack-jawed. I was just watching.
Here's the thing, is it follows the James Bond recipe without like falling prisoner to it. You know, Natalia doesn't feel like a Bond. She is a Bond girl. But from the novice perspective, I'm like, she's just one of the characters. She's a main character. She's the main character. Like, I don't see her as like, oh, this is the Bond girl. I'm like, this is his partner in crime. Like, this is his, like, James Bond's, like, key to success.
Sure.
And that's what I love about it. But it maintains that. The Bond tropes are in there. There's all the henchmen and the villains and this and that, but it does it in a way that's just so elegant.
People are up in arms about the not even the potential, but that they're going to reboot the Bond franchise. GoldenEye was a reboot.
Yeah.
Essentially, anytime they bring in a new Bond, it reboots it. Like, the Roger Moore films do not feel like the Sean Connery films.
And even they got some... People were kind of pissed when it was Roger Moore, too, right?
Yes and no. Okay. At first, sure. George Lazenby certainly doesn't feel like Sean Connery. Timothy Dalton doesn't feel like Roger Moore. Like, they go different routes all the time, but the formula is there. It's just the way they go about it is different and fresh or retro or more gritty. Like, they go different routes all the time and always have. So I have a lot of hope going forward because of things like GoldenEye. And I'm glad I can look at it today through my current eyes and appreciate it so much more than it just being the one that started it all, the one that I've watched the most, the one that I grew up with, that I have so many nostalgic memories for, that I get to share with the people I love. And that's essentially the point of us talking into these cans, is I can share something with you and share thoughts and share facts and moments with you, and you get to return the favor and share moments with me. New moments, fresh moments, fresh thoughts. And
even if they're like, chit-chat. That was stupid, like, you know, get to chat about it.
I'm glad we talked. So look forward to more of this banter. Every episode.
The verdict is in. It is for both novice and nostalgic viewers.
The verdict is in. We established that.
Everyone's on the edge of their seat, like, so who can watch it? Like,
you already said that. I'm like, let's wrap it up, Margaret. It's like, I'm not done saying the same thing.
I wanted to say the verdict is in. I've been keeping that in my catchphrase? That was in my back pocket. I was like, I can't wait to say it. And then I forgot to say it. And I was like, the verdict is in. So, hey, it's just greasy wheels. Greasy wheels. Nope, it's not greasy wheels. It's... You put a little oil, it's like tick, 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 and then it's not rusty.
Squeaky wheels.
For listening.
You get to hear this banter every episode. Like I said, we're going to be exploring more films. We got some Bond anniversaries this year. We're going to create some events and explore those, discuss them here on the show. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcast,
wherever
Google Play.
You get your podcasts.
Our home base is Audio Boom, but wherever you get your podcast, we're there.
And find us on Instagram at A Good Squeeze Pod, where we'll be posting updates on episodes and just generally showing you where we squeeze a little bit of James Bond in our lives. But until then, I'm Margo.
I'm August,
and this has been
A Good Squeeze.